the Three Tomatoes Happy Hour, and we do love happy hour and the clinking of glasses and cheers to all you fabulous women who are fully living your lives at every age and every stage. And here's the best news, every hour is happy hour. So whether you clink cheers with your coffee mug or your afternoon cappuccino, remember, as the song says, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Join us for some grown-up fun, interesting and stimulating conversations that will motivate, inspire, or just make you laugh. And for more grown-up fun, visit our website, The Three Tomatoes, and the three is spelled out, and sign up for our newsletters. Now sit back and relax and enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Three Tomatoes Happy Hour. I'm Cheryl Benton, and I am so excited to welcome our guest today to talk about dreams and astrology. Dr. Michael Lennox is a psychologist, an astrologer, and an expert in dreams and dream interpretation. He says dreams are not mere fragments of the imagination, but actually hold significant meaning and can even influence our reality. He's also a podcast host and the author of several books, including the recently released Psychic Dreamer, Exploring the Connection Between Dreams and Intuition. So welcome, Dr. Lennox.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am delighted because I love both of these topics, and I can't wait to hear your take on them. So first of all, I'm really fascinated by your background. So as a psychologist, what led you to exploring dreams and also astrology, and is there a connection between them?
Well, it went the other way around, Cheryl. I first started working with dreams and dream intuition and interpretation when I was a teenager in high school. I read Freud's interpretation of dreams at 15. And then in the high school hallways, when kids would say I had a crazy dream, I'd be like, let's talk about it. And I found that I had a gift for responding intuitively to the dreams that I was hearing. I became interested in astrology in my 20s, though I didn't start studying it until a little bit later, maybe at 29, 30, 31. I didn't go to grad school till I was about 35. And here's why. I had worked in the entertainment industry on the corporate side of things as a kind of professional arc. And I was doing all of the spiritual work with dreams and intuition with people on the side. Like, I live in Los Angeles. You can hang a shingle here about anything. So I'd go off to my job at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and sell movies on home video during the week. And I would do workshops in yoga studios here in LA talking about dreams and dream interpretation. And then I started studying astrology, and I just found that me and astrology were just a good match. That I didn't feel like I was learning astrology when I was learning astrology. It felt like I was remembering something that my soul understood and knew. So in a crisis of midlife moment at like 35, 36, after a breakup that I didn't, see coming, I thought, okay, I can't keep doing this corporate entertainment industry thing. My soul wants to be of service to help humanity. I need to know more about the human condition. I don't want to just be some woo-woo guy out there saying, pay attention to your dreams and know your rising sign. I wanted to be somebody who actually understood how the human psyche works so that I could help people at a deeper level. And that's where the master's and the doctorate in psychology came. So when I finished my education, I just started a second half of my life at around 40 as a professional spiritual teacher using astrology, dreams, and spiritual practice to help people have transformed lives.
That is a great story.
I don't mind telling you. I got a lot of hassle in my grad school hallways because my professors would be like, but you'd make such a good psychotherapist. It's like, yeah, but that's not why I came here.
Right. Yeah, you wanted the credentials around it. And
yeah,
to understand.
I wanted the education and the credit. Absolutely. I wanted to be called doctor, and I wanted to know things.
Right.
Of substance.
Well, I love that you're following all of these passions. I mean, and that what you've just said is besides what we're going to talk about, but that's such an important lesson for people. And, we talk about that all the time with our audience on knowing what your passions are and pursuing them. And that's what makes us happy. Sitting around being miserable, selling movies to people we don't care about, it's different. So I know you talk about you that you can actually manifest what you want by using your dreams. But first of all, that is a word, manifestation. It gets bandied around
Whoa.
all the time. You know, it's like we can magically think our
That's right.
way
That's right.
into all good things happening. And if that was true, all good things would be happening to
That's
you all this
right.
all the time, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
help us understand what that really is, what the
Okay.
process is, and how the part that dreams can play in that.
That's right. So, the principle of manifestation loosely reflected is the idea that we use our minds to think about the thing we wish and desire. Then we use our feeling body to sort of stimulate the sensation of that we already have that thing, and that by doing so, we're participating in how manifestation works, and we're aligning ourselves with the consciousness of drawing something in. And yes, if you talk to one of those manifestation teachers out there, it does sound like they're talking about magic and magical thinking. Now, let me first say, this is how it works. Everything in form starts with an idea. Everything that we fuel with a positive emotional sense of possibility, that's part of the creative process. And you cannot manifest anything without that mental desire and the emotional sense of, I deserve this and I anticipate it. But it ain't magic. And A, you can't have something you don't have the talent to produce. And in a delusional world of social media, you've got a lot of people who are like, I'm going to be the next blah 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 without any talent. The other thing is, you can want something deeply and profoundly in your heart, and in your unconscious feel undeserving of that. And no manifestation technique can combat the unconscious no. So if the manifestation teacher tells you to just say, I feel rich, I feel rich, I feel rich, but the unconscious says, that ain't true. Who's going to win? The unconscious is going to win. So here's where dreams play a role. First of all, manifestation is not something that happens on a Tuesday and then you win the lottery on a Wednesday, right? If you want to create something, if
If
only, right? I manifested this home in exactly the manner that manifestation is taught to happen, right? Pictured it, felt into it. But that was an 18-month process. That wasn't just, I'm going to create a home, right? I live in the groove of the manifestation. But where dreams play an outrageously powerful part is that if our conscious mind is in the yes, which it ought to be, it's in the unconscious through dreams that we can connect to where we're saying no, where we feel afraid, where we feel undeserving. Scary dreams are often our psyche's way of help processing fears that are below the surface of the consciousness so that we can wake up the next day meeting life on life's terms. So if you're in a process of manifesting relationship desires to unfold, you want to meet your soulmate, I support that 1,000%. Line your mind and your heart with that idea and keep doing it, and you're more likely to draw someone to you. But if your psyche down below says, I don't know if I deserve love, then you want to petition your dreams for information around your no. That looks like before bedtime, you get out your dream journal and you even write
Well,
it
I
down,
love this
maybe.
petitioning your dreams. So how do we do that?
Right. So say I'll use the soulmate example, right? You're looking to attract a relationship and it's kind of like a lifestyle sensibility that you periodically go into a meditative experience of I attract my soulmate and I attract my soulmate. You then want to also go to the dream state. You get out your dream journal before you go to bed and maybe you write this down or maybe you just say it as an intention or a prayerful consciousness. Bring me a dream that reflects things I don't know about my desires for relationship that might be helpful. So you ask your psyche to bring a dream to help. And the dream is not going to be the happy pappy, here it comes, because that's not what we do in dreams. We visit the shadow in dreams. So then you have dream work that rises up from the petitioning that might inform you of where the no lives in the psyche below. And so now you're cooking with gas because you're doing actions that support the yes, but you're not disincluding the place below the surface where you might be afraid of what you desire. Then I think you're really working with the whole picture.
So when you have these dreams, and I have another question after this, of those of us who don't tend to remember dreams, of which I am often one of those, and I feel like there's something wrong with me. Why can't I have, my husband has these adventure dreams. I mean, he'll
And
wake up
remembers all of the
sometimes
details, right?
and
Yeah.
just, it's like he's had a movie going on that night, and they're amazing. And I'm like, always thought of myself as the creative one, and I'm not having those kinds of dreams. But so if you wake up in the morning, you remember this dream, what are the things you should be thinking about in that dream?
One of the things that I think people need to get a little more friendly with is things that in the world of psychology we would call like active imagination. It's a Jungian principle, right? It's Jungian psychology, which is very based on archetypes and an inner sense of wholeness, where in a dream state, every aspect of a dream is considered a part of you, right? So every person in a dream is part of you. Every scenario in a dream is an aspect of your psyche. So from this perspective, this archetypal perspective, you can get somewhere in your growth in wisdom and psyche just by contemplating on the images that come up in a dream. You might hear me interpret someone's dream and go, well, the only way to work with a dream is to have a really clear mental idea of exactly what it means. But you don't. It's a fluid creative process. So let's just say I'm making this up. Someone is working on like attracting more income and do this dream petitioning, and they have a dream. Oh, God, now I'm setting myself up to come up with a brilliant example, right? You know, they have a dream that like Midas, King Midas, is on his deathbed, right? So now, this seems like such a paltry example, but you see, we've got a waking life, yes, and now we have an avatar. We have an image for the no, the fear that money will die out, or the access to creating money is, you know, on its way out, not on its way up, right? In the King Midas on his bed. You could get somewhere in your growth and your evolution just by contemplating King Midas. Drawing a picture of Midas on his deathbed would be a bigger advancement in your psyche's integrating fears around financial insecurity than you could with two talk therapy sessions talking about your fears of money. Because one keeps you up in the intellect where nothing actually changes, and the other is actually working with the richer, deeper part of you that understands symbol. So your unconscious will understand the fear of financial insecurity with that Midas image much greater than your unconscious will get it by your conscious mind talking about how scared you are.
Right.
So part of the like in the book, Psychic Dreamer, like it's like someone might buy that book and see, oh, I'm going to increase my intuition by working with my dreams. But what I'm really inviting people into is a lifestyle where you routinely make sure that you are working with the irrational, the invisible, the multidimensional, because that's a part of us that drives us forward. And if we're not doing anything to remember that part of ourselves, then we can't utilize it energetically. So this is why I encourage everybody to be paying attention to their dreams and writing them down and remembering them more. And by the way, that's possible. We can increase that for you.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about that. For those of us who don't always remember our dreams, or often do not, and I'm one of those people, although strangely recently I've been having dreams that I've actually been remembering, but I don't know why that is. But I've heard we all dream every night, and it's different times when how we wake up and remember that dream. So how do you deal? How do we help to remember more of
Sure.
these dreams, I guess, is what I'm
Well,
asking.
let's start with the idea that people are just wired differently. And one of the, like your husband, very wired to have an easy continuation between dream perception and waking perception. So he remembers his dreams without interference more than you. And on some level, that's just wiring. I liken it to a sense of direction, right? Some people have great sense of direction, some people can't. East is east, west is west, right? But some people align with that easily and some people don't. One way I sometimes describe this loosely in terms of brain chemistry, we are very visual people. Dreams are very, human beings. Dreams are very visual, but the parts of the brain that are supporting the visual imagery in dreaming is all over the brain and not connected to the visual cortex. That means the eyes are operating. So the minute those eyes open, bam, all of this soft, amorphous sensibility goes away. So even that dream that you think, I'll never forget this dream, but of course you
Right.
do, because a whole other aspect of brain chemistry is creating those images. So the way to increase memory is like a fourfold sort of thing. First of all, intention is everything. So you've got to start with a specific setting of the intention, whether it's prayerful with your words, I'd like to remember a dream, writing it down in a dream journal, I intend to remember my dreams in the morning, some kind of an intention setting. And if you really want to take this far or further, you could just make going to bed a little more sacred. You know, just treat it like the sacred act that it is, that you're going to a symbolic death to be reborn the next morning. It's a powerful thing we do every night. So even treating sleepy time more respectfully could increase dream content staying. Then you've got to go to the dream journal the next morning, no matter what. This is the important part and the fourth piece that is so crucial. You write something down, even if you don't remember anything, even if what you write is, I don't remember anything from last night. And you pause a moment, see if anything comes, and then you move on. That last step is the one that signals your unconscious that you want that window to stay open longer. And over time, you may see that in fact it does, and that dream memory sort of stays or grows. And I've seen this play out. Like I have suggested this and had people report back, oh my God, within 2 weeks, the dream memory,
Wow, that's
increases.
interesting. I'm going to have to try that. I know you talk about using your dreams for creativity. I actually have experienced that a couple of times. I wrote a couple of novels, and when I was in progress of writing them, I would actually have dreams about the characters, and I would actually remember them the next, and I'd be like, oh yeah, it was like it was helping me to write the book. It was this really interesting phenomenon, I thought.
So don't you think it's even more interesting that you report as someone who infrequently remembers your dreams, and yet when your body was up to some deep creativity, and where does creativity come from? It certainly doesn't come from the conscious mind. It comes from the deep unconscious, which is where dreams take us. So to me, it makes complete sense that someone who doesn't remember dreams as a rule is going to have their dream life show up in their writing life, because man, have I heard 2,000 stories of that over the last 40 years.
That's
It's,
interesting.
but doesn't it make sense when
Yeah,
you think about it
definitely.
as
Yeah,
the realm from
absolutely.
which all inspiration comes is the same realm we visit in dreams? Right there should be enough for anybody hearing this interview go, oh, wow, there might be value in just connecting to my dreams just as a habit,
Right.
because we're visiting a realm that inspires almost every choice we ever make. We think we're consciously aware. There's a whole thing out there in the zeitgeist these days, people talking about free will and the fact that we don't really have it. And that's because everything we do is unconscious at the end of the day. And those we don't have free will people are speaking to that our
Right.
genetics create behavior, that our unconscious creates behavior, that our patterning from parents and parents and parents create behavior. So if the unconscious is the rich motor behind all movement, wouldn't you want to visit that realm every night since you do already?
Exactly. So another thing, I know a lot of us have anxiety dreams. I know I certainly do, and I know there's times in these dreams I do remember, and I'm sure many people have this dream where you're driving in a car and you go to put your foot on the brake and the car won't stop. You can't
That's
slow it down. And
fabulous.
I wake
That's
up in the morning,
fabulous.
I usually remember that because my heart is pounding. And I'm
That's
like,
right.
well, of course, because I'm feeling out of control in my life right now. And then I
That's
think
right.
about how can I take control? So sometimes I feel like those are little wake-up calls to you, right?
Well, what I love that you just said is you do what I would instruct people to do after having such a dream, which is to look around your life the moment you've had the dream, because it does mean something does feel out of control. And wouldn't it be then valuable to stop for a moment and say, okay, wait, is there something that actually needs my attention? Because most people are so used to having the anxiety recurring dream and the image is the same every time, and you've had it for years, people will then dismiss it as, oh, yeah, there's that dream again. But it came for a reason. It's not haphazard. You find an image early in your life that matches stress for you. Do you know the kids today, kids in their 20s and 30s? Okay, I just called them kids, 30-year-olds,
Well,
kids.
they are
I
today,
feel
too.
so old. So the kids today, their stress dreams are more peopled by zombies and vampires because of video games.
Right.
So lots of stress dreams I've heard from people, it's like, oh, you watched a movie at 5 years old, and that's what this image is from. So for whatever reason, your driving uncontrollably was just the right image that your brain said the first time, let's hold on to this one. This one is a good, evocative, accurate description of how Cheryl feels anxious when she's feeling out of control. And then you do what you do organically, what I would instruct someone to do. That's the time to say,
Right.
what feels out of control and doesn't need my attention? There's got to be a reason the psyche is giving you the dream. It's knocking on your door saying, hey, pay attention because you're about to trip and fall. I'm here to help. But only if you pay attention.
Exactly. That's a very good show. So there, I have one other thing on the dreams that I definitely want to move over to astrology because it's one of my favorite things to talk about. But I know you talk about visitation dreams. Does that mean people who have died who come into your dreams?
Yes.
Because I've had in very recently, I've had dreams about two people who died not that long ago who came in my dream, and they were so happy, and it was like such a nice experience to see them in my dreams. So, you kind of wonder, are they really coming into my dream, or do I just want to think of them this way? What do you
Let
tell people
me
about
ask you
those
a
kinds of
question.
dreams?
Since you've had a recent experience of this kind of a dream, was the dream that you had where they came in and were very happy and it felt happy, was it a very kind of singular setting? Or was it a chaotic storyline dream where you
It
were
was
going up the
chaotic. It was kind of a winding story, but somehow at the end of it, I ran into this person on the street.
And in that moment of just running into them, though, the thing that happened was a connection and a sense of happiness.
Yes.
Okay, that to me spells visitation. And these are people close to you, but not like mom, grandmom.
Exactly, friends.
Okay,
Yeah, they're
that's
friends.
interesting. The hallmark of a visitation dream is the singularity of scenario and message, right? The dream is often takes place inside of someone's bedroom that they're sleeping in. The dream might be, I'm in my bed sleeping, and grandma comes in, sits at the edge of the bed, and there's either sometimes it's a bench in a park, there's all these bucolic settings that these dreams often take place in, but they're singular, and the person's conveyance of message. Spoken sometimes, but often not verbal. And the message is always a singular expression of, I love you, all is well, I'm okay, something like that. So, what you're describing is a standard dream, but if at the end of it, you just sort of bump into someone and have what I would call a visitation experience. Within a chaotic dream, to me, that's still a visitation because the quality of the experience was just bumping in and having a conveyance of happiness. And because these are people who are more acquaintances than blood relatives and deep connections, that it makes sense maybe that you have this energetic connection, but not the, like, you know, they come into the bedroom, sit down on the bed and say all is well kind of thing. But that's the hallmark to look for in terms of your listeners, is that singularity of sensation. And more importantly, the feeling of it. You came out of your dream with a felt sensation of connection, right?
Right.
Okay, well, imagine you're a 28-year-old dude living in Southern California, and you don't really have a spiritual sensibility, and you were raised primarily by your grandmother, and she passes away, and it's devastating to you. And as you're driving down to San Diego to go with the family, you're falling asleep, you pull to the side of the road, and you have a dream where grandma visits. It's unmistakable, and it's life-changing. And so I had a conversation with that guy 6 months after he had that experience. I still remember that conversation because of the way he wept, telling me what had happened. And it wasn't, I wasn't moved because of grandma. I don't know his grandma. It's like, boo-hoo, your grandma died. Yeah, so what? You and the 7 billion other people. What moved me was seeing that he was transformed by that experience. He will have a different life for the rest of his life, because he understands we are deeply connected beyond death. And that experience transformed him. I've heard that story 10 or 20 times.
Wow, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
Wow, this is amazing. I'm thinking about dreams in just a whole new and different way. And you've given us all so many insights, and I'm definitely going to get your book so I can learn more. So now, though, I do want to move over to astrology with a little bit of the, you know, some of the time we have left, because it's something I've been fascinated with for a long time. I've had my chart done years ago, but then kind of didn't know what to do with that. You know, like most of us, I'll read a daily horoscope, but I know that's not specific. So tell us what it's to you. What is astrology? That's my question. So that's a big question, I know, but.
Okay. So let's start with the idea that we hinted at when we were talking about dreams, this idea that there's this enormous thing that's happening here, most of which is invisible to us, that we are participating in. Right. So we have to, you can't appreciate astrology unless you understand that we're all connected. Right? The people who don't believe it or don't get it are the ones who live very separate. I'm in a body. We're separate. We're not connected, but we are profoundly. Certainly the physicists know this, right? In the world of molecular biology, we understand that there's more space between us than there is matter between us. We're all connected. In fact, if you think about the creation of the solar system, this was once just one wide disk of dust and material and gas and stuff, like one stream of that that coalesced into planets. We inhabit one of them. So even right there is a little image that says, oh, right, me here on Earth, we're not really disconnected from Mars and Venus and Mercury and Saturn and Pluto. We were once all one flat disk. Okay. So if this thing is unfolding, this thing we call life and consciousness is unfolding, and we're all moving in this soup that includes a spinning Earth and a moon around it, and we're all moving and the planets are all moving in tandem, and we are all connected, then that means that the movement out there, planets, and the movement in here, human beings and people's insides, are connected. If I got really aggressive and nasty with you right now, you would shrink back and sort of respond to that. And contrarily, if I got different and sort of warm and yummy, you might lean in, and like everything that happens over here impacts that. And that idea ripples out beyond the Earth. Do I understand that that is a wild leap for people to make, because they think things like, well, Mars is so far away from us, how could he be impacting us? Well, it's because he doesn't. The planets don't cause anything. They reflect something. Back to the idea, if I get aggressive and you move back, I didn't really cause that. It just was a reflection of my movement and your movement. So you take your first breath, and the planet system has a shape. If you took your first breath, one moment later, the shape has changed. And so the idea of your chart can reflect who you are. There's just archetypal meaning associated with every planet and every angle. The angles in astrology have archetypal meaning, the placement of the planets, the quality of the planets. And so the astrological chart uses that makeup of you to describe you. Okay, so that again, I can hear all sorts of science. Listen, I was raised by an empirical scientist and I consider myself 50% scientist. Thank God I'm 50% mystic, so I can appreciate the mysticism of this, but my scientific mind calls bullshit. Not bullshit, but like, what? How can that be? But I'm an empirical study of my own that astrology is true. Is it replicatable? No, I'm only one person, but I have thousands of times sat with people and their charts and spoken into what I saw and had it, verified behind. I've had thousands of experience of saying, oh, Uranus is coming by your moon in May, and that's going to mean blah, 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 and have people start weeping because in May they lost their puppy. Right. So it's the reflection that's important to at least start understanding the possibility of astrology is true and accurate. The minute you're in planets cause things, and I don't believe that, I'd be like, that's smart because that's stupid because they don't.
So let me ask you right now a couple questions. Obviously, to me, first, the big one is in terms of astrology and our world right now, which for many of us feels like a very scary place. So, what, from an astrological standpoint, is that is happening? And do you see things getting better or worse?
In terms of broad strokes, outer planets changing signs change things on the planet very dramatically and directly. For example, back in 2007 and 8, you had the planet Pluto that represents deep change and transformation, moving in and then out and in and out over 2 years, the sign of Capricorn. Capricorn is a sign that rules structures and organizations and things like banking, housing, markets. Those are Capricorn inventions. And so when the planet of death and rebirth and total destruction moved into the sign of those kinds of structures, we had the worst recession in modern history. And astrologers knew that was coming. So now Pluto's doing the same thing. He's leaving Capricorn and entering Aquarius. So he's changing signs again 20 years later. So Aquarius invented technology. So all of this explosion of AI and technology that we're seeing, astrologers knew this was coming. That's Pluto moving in and out of Capricorn and Aquarius. But Pluto changing signs means a generational shift on the planet where lots and lots of change is happening. But meanwhile, Neptune's going to change signs next year. Uranus is going to change signs next year. Neptune rules religiosity, spiritual connection, beliefs, and he's moving into the sign of war, Aries, fire. Uranus brings sudden change. Pluto, it's slow change. Uranus in Gemini, I think in 2026 or so, is going to change signs as well. And now you've got three powerhouse planets changing signs within a 2 year period. That reflects outrageous large amounts of shift on the planet and things rumbling below. So you look out at the world and you see that everything is unstable and on the precipice of great change. That's what's scary right now, is the world is already terrifying, but we all know we're not there yet. Like we're on the precipice of probably more. So, yeah. The planets changing signs reflect all of that change cramming into a few years. So then the sort of contra question is like, well, then what do you do with that information without like being terrified? It's like, well, think about things like resilience, and you trust that you've gotten through the past. You turn within and you learn what lights you up and makes you most passionate and joyful. Then you go out and bring that to the world, because that's how you can help peace for humanity. If you're an activist, activate, get out there and shout if that's what drives you. The planet needs our activists, but not everybody's an activist, right? So there's lots of ways to respond to the crazy world. My prescription would be turn within, solve the war inside your own psyche. And when more people in the world are less in conflict in their own individual sensibility, the collective will be able to reflect greater peace out there, because there's more peace in here. That I know how to do. I don't know how to change the world. That's overwhelming to me, but
Right,
I do know how to
right.
help people go in inside themselves, find the place where they're warring, and unpack that a little bit so that they can be more joyful and creative and bring that service to humanity and hopefully help bring in the possibility of peace.
Well, let's hope that we all, more and more of us, keep doing that, so that will happen. This has just been
It's
so
been
very
swell. Thank you.
fascinating,
Yeah,
and I
I
just
love
want
it.
to say, I know I recently, just today actually, just started to follow you on social media, and I knew you do this daily astrological readings called Red Robe Astrology. So just
That's
quickly
right.
tell our listeners a little bit about that. Every day you have something.
Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. I do a daily video every morning without fail, minute and a half to 2 minute video talking about the day's astrology. And yes, I call it Red Robe Astrology because I'm wearing my red bathrobe because I've just gotten up. It's 4:30 or 5 in the morning and I'm doing it first thing. And I've been doing this for like 5, 6 years now. And people say to me, like, how do you do that every day? And it's like, it's no different than brushing my teeth and having my first cup of coffee. It's just a part of how I meet my morning every day. But I do like being of service in that way, and it's fun and it's helpful, and it draws people toward it.
Well, that's great. So I'm going to be a big fan of that, and I know everyone listening to that is going to do that too. So I can't thank you enough. You have so much great positive energy. I have learned so much. We're going to have you back where we can talk more in depth on some of these topics, as I feel we just really grazed the surface. But again, I want to remind everyone that Dr. Lennox has a new book called Psychic Dreamer. It's available on Amazon and booksellers everywhere. You also do a podcast called Conscious Embodiment. As we just said, follow him on social media and get his daily forecast on what's going on. And make sure to visit him online at michaellennox.com. So thank you so much for being such a delightful and very informative and very entertaining guest today.
Thank you for having me.